So, welcome to March's podcast.
Yes.
Michelle.
And Trevor.
And Two Peas in a Podcast, which can now be found on Spotify, apparently, Trevor. We have hit the big time.
I never heard of Spotify, but I'm just so out of date. It's ridiculous.
I'm so excited. I can listen to it in the car. I'm beside myself. Can I just, before we do anything else, I have to talk about this fantastic weather we've been having, tomato weather.
Yep.
You're calling it. As we are, honestly, I love not a hot summer.
So
and it's been fantastic. So, no, I'm loving it. But last podcast, I asked Trevor if I could talk about my blower vac, and he's even put it here, and I'm allowed to talk about my blower vac. So I've always been one of those people who's been a little bit anti all the fancy tools. I'm not going to lie. I've been a bit of a snob, a fancy tools snob. But I have gotten over myself, and like all really good converts, I've leapt into it with an enthusiasm that is terrifying.
And a lot of noise.
It is. So we had the hedge clipper, which I love, and then my parents bought me a blower vac for my birthday, and I love my blower vac. And I know we're meant to, you know, kind of get a workout sweeping the path, sweeping up all the areas, but the blower vac, mine can suck in all the leaves and turn it into mulch, which I can put into the garden. See, it makes me feel better.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, that is a very good advantage. Have you got any more very good advantages like that?
That I don't have to sweep, and it looks way better than when I sweep. Look, it gets it done about a quarter of the time, which I must admit, I am a little time poor, which is a bit frustrating.
Yeah.
But it does look really gorgeous, and I'm kind of trying to be a little bit kind to myself. And then my son bought a whippersnipper, so I've been using his whippersnipper.
Really?
Which I do like, but they're not made for tall people, and I'm a very tall person.
It hurts your back a bit.
It does hurt my back a bit, I'm not going to lie.
Mm.
But I've decided I have to kind of get over some of my anti-tools thing. But, you know, the reality is, as you've got here, a planter hoe, a good rake.
Yeah.
Like, I love my rake. I love my Dutch hoe. Not that I'm a Dutch hoe, but I love a Dutch hoe.
That's a very good one off the cuff.
Thank you.
You know how Prince Charles sort of advocates, like I do, going back to the 14th century sort of thing, you know. And he went out to Romania, and there's YouTube videos on Romania where they're still doing it the old-fashioned way. Well, I was really surprised because I know how to use a planter hoe. Now, a planter hoe, when you first use it, that will get to a couple of muscles on the side of your torsos around about your waistline. They're called the obliques, the external obliques. That's where it really hurts. But after you hoe a lot, you can do fantastic things with the hoe.
Yeah.
And I was really amazed. I got a message from the council saying, yours is one of the property that needs cleaning up before bushfire season. Yeah,
I wouldn't have thought that. Yeah.
Well, you would have at the time.
Oh.
But I used the old hoe and I got down tall grass all around the boundary, all around the fence lines, and it was quicker, I reckon, than when I tried to do it with a whippersnipper, because that's a hard implement.
I find the whippersnipper too short. It's great for small areas, make the tidy up around the edge of your garden bed or whatever.
Mm.
But my hoe, the handle's longer,
yeah.
And I love it. And you know what else I love too is it kind of really gets the under the roots of all the the stuff, whereas even weeding and stuff like that doesn't seem to do that. And you're right about the workout, the arms, the bingo arms.
Yeah,
well, that's why we're so fit and svelte.
I mean, I've only got about six tools, really. I've got the rake, the hoe, the shovel, the fork, the trowel, and they go everywhere with me, you know, and they do everything. And I just hang them up afterwards, and I have got a size that where I can do that, you know. I can clean things up quickly using the hoe. So that is fine, but I do admit that that's me and that is a bit old-fashioned, you know.
It's also about being, I guess, energetic in the garden and using the garden a bit as a workout. And I must admit, when I first got the blower vac, I thought, oh, God, am I being lazy? But for me, being a bit time poor, that's helped, and it's helped tidy up and all that sort of stuff. Look, you can't beat the hoe, the Dutch hoe, my secateurs.
You can beat it time-wise.
Yeah, you can beat it time-wise. My secateurs, I love a really good pair of secateurs. I think you can't go past that.
Yeah. Well, while we're on that subject, have you got a stone? Get your sharpener.
No.
So you can buy a little sort of, it looks like a little grey stone, and that sharpens the edge just by rubbing along it. and you use it for your kitchen knife, same thing.
Yeah.
So you need one of them because, unfortunately, even though my tools don't have motors, they still they still have maintenance. You've got to put linseed oil on the handles, blah, blah, blah. So there is still some maintenance associated with tools.
And with tools, you really do get what you pay for. Like, yeah. Honestly, I think invest,
yeah.
Really, because, you know, it's also about that landfill, you know. It's, I can't even think what I paid for my spade, but it was not a cheap spade.
Mm.
But I probably had it for 20 years.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, whereas my shovel, I thought, I'm not going to pay too much for it. Well, I reckon that barely lasted 2 years, and then you've got to throw it out. And yeah. Then you kind of have that guilty thing of landfill.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Well, I mean, I have noticed that there's a weird sort of, that there are white shovels in the hardware stores. They haven't got any fixed. Everything's just been welded. It's very, very light steel stuff, and there's no rivets or bolts or nails or anything for fixing them all. Well, those things are very good, actually. They're fairly new, but they also seem to be maintenance free. So there are some good additional tools that are very, very modern. I've got my grandfather's blacksmithing tools that are very, very good.
Very, very good. Or as my Orpa used to say, this axe belonged to my great-grandfather. It's had 3 new handles and 4 new heads, and it's lasted forever. And I remember as a kid thinking, wow, that's amazing. He was a bit of a wag, my grandfather.
Yeah, so this is all right.
So this month, Trevor, soil prep.
Well, I can only state that.
I'm excited. I've been doing my soil prep. I've prepped my area for the sweet peas, which I should have planted yesterday on the 17th, I realise, but will be planted on the weekend.
Good.
Unfortunately, I did dig through the Bokashi buckets. I've got a Bokashi bucket, so I dug through that compost. And then I was in isolation for a week, and then I was sitting there merrily working at my desk, and a smell that was indescribable hit my nostrils as I realised my dog had dug up some of it and rolled in it. It was there I was washing the dog in the middle of the day. But I have been really focusing on soil prep this year.
Good.
Lots of sheep manure, lots of compost.
Yeah, well, and also the green manure is a good idea. I mean, yeah. I've got several areas that I have recently planted out, and even the native plants, if you put down compost that's got manure and pellets, even though it's all been aged before perhaps, if you put a green manure crop through it, that is, you put in wheat or barley or soya beans or something that just grows up to it's 4 to 6 inches high or 100 to 150 millimetres high, and then you fork it over and fork it in, but God, that's a good preparation.
What I actually did was I actually found a jar of old seeds. They were obviously really old, and then I had some out-of-date seeds. And I thought, I'll green manure those. Rather than wasting them, I actually hate that waste.
Mm.
So because I've started a new veggie patch area, which is going great guns because I've done really good soil prepping,
right.
I just planted it out, probably did that, I reckon, probably a little bit early. I did it in December, and then thought, whatever happens, happens, right? And then I don't know what it all was. Some bits came up. It was all very scraggly. I wasn't really fussed about what it was. What I wanted to do was not waste the seeds.
Yep.
And then I've dug it all through, raked it, hoed it, all the rest of it. And then I've already I'm starting my seeds for the brassicas and things like that. So I'm excited. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, well, I've opened up the old chook run. I mean, about in December, I put the chooks elsewhere and I didn't do anything. I didn't water it and it was just laid idle. But now I've come back and I try to get worms into soil that's been consolidated. Every insect in the place was wiped out because of the chooks. And they also, strangely enough, is my oldest and my best bed, but they had compacted it. So what I did is I piled heaps of straw and pelletised manure and compost, and I watered it down with seaweed and Epsom salts. I did everything I could, and then I dug out the pass and I put the fine silt from the pass on top of that compiled straw and stuff like that.
Ah.
And so I planted into that using a Koya seed raising mix on top of the seed, because you just make channels through it. It's not rotted properly yet. It hasn't had a green manure, but you do get these four rows of what is visibly seed raising mix, and you hit that seed raising mix with the bottom of your fork, no, of your rake, sorry, to get a good soil to seed compaction, and then you keep it wet. You actually put hessian bags and shade cloth and all sorts of things over it for a couple of weeks so that the water you are giving it, which is probably twice a day, is it stays there, and so the whole of the soil stays damp for 2 weeks, and believe me, everything comes up. Yeah. Everything comes up, because that includes all the weeds that you've got. But even so, that wasn't a green manure crop, but I have other areas where I planted, well, mustard or soya beans or something like that, and before it grew very old, I turned it in. Well, I found that really is very successful.
Yeah, and I've got, with you as well, I've got the chook, so you put the chook manure on there, and you kind of, with a bit of the hay and stuff like that, but be really careful with that, because that can, as you said...
Nitrogen draw
it
out.
Yeah, and also it can kind of bulk out your beds, like you were saying, I made that mistake. So I find watering that down and putting it in, but absolutely chucking green. And people get really precious about what they're growing. And I, well, people, me. So part of my thing about putting all the seeds in is I had to kind of step aside and go, it doesn't matter what, I'm actually using this as a green crop. So when things were coming up and I was like, oh, maybe if I let it go, like it was out of season really, and it wasn't going to grow to fruition. So it really was only, so probably, yeah, about December. And then I hoed that all in probably end of February, I reckon. So it was probably about 6 weeks. I probably left it a little bit later.
Yeah, well, no, that's good.
Yeah, and so it was about me going, this is the purpose of this, because I wanted my veggie patch to be ready and doing some amazing stuff this year.
Yeah, well, I think I planted some seed in the ground. I planted carrots and radish together, because radish comes up and shows you where the rows are.
Yeah.
Carrots take a while longer. And then I planted silver beet and beetroot together. And then I put a whole bed of four types of lettuce in. I put in mustard, red and green, salad lettuce, rocket, and a fourth one.
Mesculum,
thank you. So I put them all in fairly quickly, and peas. I've got trellises there, so snow peas and sugar snap peas. So they've all gone in the last week, actually. Oh, I'm a bit late, but I don't know. You just sort of, you're isolated for a week or two, and you find that everything passes on, and we miss February.
And also, I think the weather's been so much different as well that it's kind of making you go, oh, I wonder if I'll chuck these in. I've got the stuff to grow this weekend. I've got a trellis to move in my new area, and I was sort of thinking, oh, have I left a few bits and pieces? But then I put in the beetroot seeds, and I'm not kidding you, they have grown three times as fast as they normally do.
Yeah, they do.
They, like, honestly, and by the way, eat the leaves. I cut the leaves as salad.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah.
Cut the leaves, eat the leaves. Don't try and get fancy with your beetroot and let it get enormous.
Yeah.
That's not a
not necessary, but even if it does, I must say, that it makes a beautiful juice.
I was going to say, or pickle it. If you're going to do that, pickle it or juice it, but the really little ones are just beautiful, just steamed.
And your salads and stuff.
And chuck through a salad. So what else are we planting?
Well, that is my current plantings. I have just harvested the sweet corn, and that was, well, it was a bit disappointing. I didn't get a lot, but it was beautiful what I did get, so that was sort of successful. The pumpkins are coming on now, and of course there's bloody zucchini.
Oh, my God.
But I have mastered the zucchini, the zucchini patty, or the zucchini pancake. There's a lot of recipes for it.
There's a lot of it. It's quite funny, but this is a classic zucchini story. On the Wednesday, I thought, oh, look, that zucchini will be ready for the weekend. And by the time I went out to get it, it was like a zucchini boat.
Yeah, I see it
there. Chop them up and...
Grate them, yeah.
You grate them, chop them up. And the other one is zucchini chutney, anything like that. You know, zucchini's really good.
It is. It's got a broad scope. If you just put salt on it in the colander and then squeeze it out, you get rid of a hell of a lot of juice. So you do. And then put a couple of eggs. I mean, that's sort of cheating, but eggs and flour in it, and you got yourself quite a... Well, I also think cheese, you know, a bit of Parmesan cheese in it. And the old zucchini patty is not a bad standby for the end of summer.
If you can cope with, and I guess this is one of the things too, like I made zucchini and chickpea curry and I froze it. Now, when you defrost it, it doesn't look as fancy as when you make it immediately.
Fresh,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you can put the aesthetic of it aside, the flavour's still great, and so then you got zucchini in the middle of winter. And zucchini and chickpea curry is divine with brown rice.
Well, I think zucchini is highly versatile, actually.
Yeah. And eat the ends. Don't throw the ends away, eat the ends.
Really?
Yeah, everyone throws the ends away. I chuck the whole lot in.
So big they don't have to eat it.
True, that's true. And I'm picked a whole bunch of little ones and I just eat them like cucumbers. But you can't do that with the shop-bought ones.
No, well, the little ones are the what we used to pick, but now they're doing medium-sized ones mainly, so...
Yeah.
Fashions change.
They do. They do. So in April, what are you planting?
Well, April is the month of the onions. And that whole group. So you don't have to plant that. Yes, what I'm just saying there is that, yeah, you have to put in your beetroot, your carrots, your peas, your lettuce and your broccoli and your cabbages all now, but you can leave out the onions, the leeks, the spring onions and the garlic. Now, they're fairly important, actually, because the interesting thing about those ones is that you can buy onions and spring onions from the shop, cut off the roots and put them in the ground. They'll grow again.
They do really, really well. I had leeks last year. I grew leeks.
Yep.
And they were just divine. Just fantastic. And so easy.
Yeah, I do think they're a good crop. You need weed-free area for that. But if our listeners have been with us all the time, if they've got raised beds or something like that, it's not a problem for them. And they don't have to do it immediately. They've got a little while for those ones. The herbs at present... Well, I've just planted seed of herbs. I planted, you know, you were saying about fennel seed. I looked at my packet and it was, should be planted by 2013. So I thought, oops. But I put a few in and I threw the rest out just, but I've got some fennel plants actually going to seed. So hopefully when I take the chooks out of there, I'll be getting some fennel free of charge.
Yeah, I love fennel. Fennel's one of those really funny, a bit like coriander. I love fennel. I just slice it and eat it raw. Like, I'll have one little snack pack at work of raw fennel, and the fronds are gorgeous. Chop them up. And I've got fennel that's just coming back year after year after year. I don't actually replant it. It just self-seeds all over the shop.
It has a suspicious aniseed flavour. I'm thinking ouzo.
I'm Dutch, so we've got lots of aniseed stuff. Dill is just... I love dill. I would just grow dill just so I could, a bit like basil, you know, you rub your hands through it and you just smell it.
And it's good with spuds too.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. So I've got the dill and the fennel in as well. Tarragon, that's cut and come cut again. And the coriander. Coriander's a funny one. I either have a great year of coriander or I get nothing.
I got to say, tarragon's like that for me.
Yeah.
And they will self-sow. That's the best way, really.
I know. Rub the seed heads together, people. Spray them around everywhere. Like, don't be really precious about the garden having this structure. I think if you're going to be really precious about structure in your garden, you're going to be in a bit of trouble with some things.
I think let the self-sown ones come up, check them out. I've got a couple of sunflowers coming up at present that I'm watering and taking care of. But, I mean, sunflowers are phenomenal, really.
Yeah, yeah. My marigolds have gone bananas. They're everywhere, which I just let them go.
Yeah, well, talking of that, we are also trying to keep the garden full of insects and so forth. This is becoming fairly common now, but I've found that sunflowers, cosmos, marigolds, hollyhocks, salvias, they're all pretty good for the bees and butterflies, and it's just nice to see a garden where there's all these wings flying around.
I know, it's beautiful. Over the Christmas holidays, I built a little bug hotel, so one of my darling work colleagues gave me a little bug hotel that I've hung in the tree. And I took an old structure that I had for the chooks, which was very open and not great. And then I had to have a tree cut down, which was a bit sad. But anyway, we drilled holes in that and I made a little bug hotel. Because you've got, you know, I know certain people were horrified that I was attracting bugs and spiders to the garden. But attract them and it's gorgeous. And I've got a ton of buddleia and salvias and the butterflies just... gorgeous, just absolutely gorgeous. Quince, I've got butterflies in the quince tree, and spiders this year have been fantastic.
Yeah, spiders have been good, yeah.
Haven't they been great? Which I find really funny because people kind of freak out about spiders. Leave them alone.
Well, I mean, the golden orbs, they've got phenomenally strong threads.
Yeah.
You can walk into them and then back out and they're still there. I mean, they're very strong.
And you know what? Watch them. My daughter-in-law said to me, she said, gosh, she said, you know, my son and I both get so excited over spiders and watching them spin their web. She thought it was really funny, but I had a golden orb spinner web on the front veranda, and sadly, I didn't realise it was there, so you accidentally walk through a bit of it. And I was just like, oh, sorry. But it was just gorgeous watching it pack it up, like some little old lady packing up its knitting, you know. And so I was standing there watching as it was packing up this web. And honestly, I must have sat there for about 20, 25 minutes watching it. And then I thought, if I sit still enough, it was watching me and I was watching it. Mm. And then I thought, just start spinning again. And then slowly it started spinning, and I just sat quietly and watched it. So please be nice to spiders. They really are amazing.
Well, be nice to nature generally. I was listening to, there's an English program about poets and artists, and it was about the inner mind, that they all took drugs, including heroin and stuff. And so they were in danger, you know, and Wordsworth was one of them. But Wordsworth left them, and the others kept on going. Of course, they went downhill because you do get addicted to that stuff. Absolutely. And you can't shake it. But Wordsworth went back to nature, and he found that by being in something that was bigger than him, he could escape. And there's another story recently on TV about a farm, a prison in Ayres Peninsula that was a farm prison. And when they do their farming, they actually escape their old mental attitude. And so being in something that's bigger than you, that is being in nature, when you can see that you're not in control because there's all these things happening that you're just watching.
Yeah.
When that happens, that's actually good for your mental health.
I think so. I think, and it releases you of that kind of responsibility that you feel that you have as well. I left work tonight, and one of my youth workers said to me, now, make sure you go lie in your garden this weekend. And I said, oh, that's really great advice, because you've sort of got written here, like the caper berries that you've got, that attracts a whole bunch of, sometimes you didn't always want to attract the bugs. But
yeah, definitely.
And I agree. It's kind of sitting there and going, there's this whole world of which you are able to
can discover,
improve or destroy. A very dear friend of mine, and Trevor's, is not a fan of spiders and informed us that she wanted them all wiped free from the earth, which horrified us. But we're like, just sit and watch all that, like attract them. But what we do as humans have this power, like you're saying, about whether we attract or detract ecosystems from the garden and attract them. Your caterpillars, your lemon verbena, honestly, the ladybug. There's nothing more exciting than a ladybug.
Well, I don't know if I ever told you, I probably have, but in California in the 1950s, there was this guy in charge of agriculture in California, and the San Joaquin Valley was the biggest and most important breadbasket in the whole of America. Have I told you this?
No.
Well, this guy in charge of it, he followed the rule book of the Department of Agriculture, and he ended up blanket spraying the whole lot with DDT. And then the farmers started coming to him and saying, well, look, everything's dead.
Mm.
There's nothing alive. And the aphids that you're trying to kill have re-amorphized into something different, and they're not dead. And so this guy, and this is world news by now, because the entire breadbasket of America, all the orange trees, all the bloody fruit trees, everything were dead. And the only thing living was the aphids that all this stuff was meant to kill. I was in primary school, and there was this radio above the middle of the blackboard, and it was telling us this story. And then he went and tried to find what was wrong, because he didn't consider himself guilty, you see, because he was just following the rules.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And he said,
like all good bureaucrats, yeah.
He said, I've got a solution. So they had a meeting, and he told the solution. He said it was ladybirds, because ladybirds would have destroyed the aphids in time, and there was no chance of them amorphizing to a different state. So this guy who actually destroyed the breadbasket of America was also the first person to come up with organic gardening. And so you got to remember that, because that is a lesson from the past, in which you will destroy the world if you try and blanket kill everything, you know?
Absolutely. Look, I've got grass that everyone thinks is hysterical that I keep fighting. I'm not fighting the grass. Eventually, the things that I've grown and the mulch that I've put on it will stop it from being in spots that I don't want it to be in. But I'm sure as a buggery, I'm not going to spray poison on there, because, you know, for me, and I've got, you know, bees. I have so many bees. I really consciously plant to attract wildlife.
Well, I think that's what you've got to do. You've got a really serious state, really.
Over Christmas holidays, I had a bit of an awful incident, and part of what had happened with this incident was that my frog pond had been affected. So my frog pond, everything in it, had died.
From the smoke?
Yeah, from the smoke. And I've got a weight, I've been cleaning it out, and when it's all clean, we'll start again. I've been planting a ton of native grasses, which are all coming up absolutely delightfully. I'm so excited about what's happening, but it was utterly devastating to have the frogs not being heard in the evening. And I'm not kidding you, since the frogs have gone, I know for a fact I haven't had as many bugs, haven't had as many of the animals. So, you know, you really do have to provide those wonderful habitats and also look after them.
I think we're also guilty of, there were more frogs here when I came than there are now. And I don't really know why, but I suspect cleaning up was the trick.
Okay,
yeah. You know, you keep everything nice and clean, you get rid of all the rubbish, but a lot of things live under rubbish.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So it's a contradiction, but there you go.
So you've got here about the natural healing, but also talking about planting your flowers, planting your comfrey and borage.
Yeah, well, today I turned over the compost. Now, I don't make compost in summer usually, but this year the pile in the first compost bin where we formed the first layer of compost is in the first bin. I decided to turn it over because it was definitely very full, and it had been full probably a month ago.
Yeah.
So it was super full, and I turned it, and it was very, very dry. It was a bit damp on the bottom, and it was a bit damp in the middle, but it was very, very dry. So I really think to keep that working would have taken 400 mil of water on top of that metre and a half square. So you'd work out how many litres of water. It would be in the tens of thousands that you'd need to make that a good compost over summer. So I turned it. It was too dry. I know that I can't make compost in summer, no matter how good the summer is, because the hot winds and the dry air and all that will dry it out. But compost is a remarkable thing, really. It is what generates all our gardening.
So you put tons of comfrey on your compost.
Yeah.
But another thing I've started using comfrey for is edging.
Okay.
And it actually makes a really good edging of it, of the veggie patch. If this was television, you would see Trevor looking at me shocked. But the comfrey, for some reason, is edging around the veggie patch. And I'll chop it and dig it up and chuck it through.
You know? How much comfrey you got? Six?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, so you bought a punnet of comfrey.
Oh, probably.
It's all down deep. You can't really destroy it.
Yeah, a bit more, yeah. And then you just chop the leaves. And,
yeah.
But because of the deep root system, yeah, it's actually making a really lovely edging.
Well, lucerne's the same. I mean, they are phenomenal things. They're both really good for compost. They're both really good for insects. And borage, of course, is the all-time bee collector.
I love borage. So you know that borage you gave me a couple of years ago? It's just, so it's went berserk, but it's self-seeded all over the garden, which is absolutely fantastic. I love chucking the little blue flowers through a salad, but bees love borage more than they love buddleia, I reckon.
Yeah.
I think,
they do.
Yeah.
But all different sorts of things. The lucerne is also very good. It's also very good on the compost. So lucerne is worthwhile having.
Now, Trevor, you've been busy looking at some organic keywords, which I think we've been talking off podcast about, I guess, the massive shift towards organics. We've lived in an odd world where there's been the shift to organics, but we're even noticing in a lot of the mainstream gardening shows, all that sort of thing, people are really recognising the importance of it, but they're really recognising the importance of the soil system.
Yeah.
And that was a big thing for me to learn. When I first started gardening, I just wanted to plant stuff and I didn't want to do the boring stuff, like make the soil beautiful. And then things died and then they had to be composted back into the soil and then the soil became beautiful. But honestly...
Well, I mean, I've been organic for too long, decades, and I read an advert in the Farmer magazine and it had all these words I never recognised. They were all organic words. And I just thought that I'd look them up.
Yeah.
Because you get out of date pretty quick. And some of these words are words they are products. You know, you have these organic companies now that are selling organic products, and that hasn't really been before.
No.
So you got a funny one like Humate, what is a humate? A humate apparently is brown coal.
Oh, okay.
Now, I've actually bought this from the local company down at Virginia. There's an organic company down there, and they do sell 30,000-year-old compost.
Oh, my God, I love it.
Which is brown coal, and it's called a humate. Well, its qualities are sort of strange in that they bring out minerals. They unlock minerals, phosphorus and calcium. So they are very, very old, decomposed matter. And apparently they're the soft layer on top of the coal. They're not actually all the coal. So black coal's no good. Black coal's got nothing. But brown coal, which is young coal, has got this layer of sort of humates on the top, which is a sort of peat layer.
Because if you don't... Like for me, many, many moons ago when I was first gardening, I didn't want to do the whole, the soil and the compost, because you want to just plant your plants, right? And I thought organic gardening was not spraying poison, but that's not organic gardening at all. Organic gardening is really creating this beautiful system within your garden that can support itself.
Well, indeed.
Or you're creating your microbes and you kind of that whole beautiful system where everything's working together.
Yep.
To sort of give you the beautiful...
Yeah, and you don't have to use the word organic either because, well, you do. And in a way, everyone is an environmentalist.
Yeah.
It's not surprising that the first people who got into organics have monopolised the word organic. So to counter that, there's people who have come up with biological. There is the Biological Farmers of Australia Association. And it's more or less the same thing. But there's so many people now on the same course that we're getting all these new words. I mean, I don't know whether you've heard of graphite batteries.
No.
But everyone's talking about lithium batteries, but lithium batteries last for 10 years and then you have to replace the whole thing and they're hard to recharge. Whereas there are graphite batteries that are more efficient, they generate no heat, they recharge quicker, they have a 20-year lifespan and you can pull them apart and rebuild them. So that's very interesting to farmers because farmers are very interested about maintaining their own gear.
Absolutely.
And also having a maximum lifespan of it. And so, you know, the word organic then suddenly becomes something entirely different. It becomes working with farmers who want to leave the soil better for their children than it was for them.
Especially as, you know, for some areas it's been so decimated, so it's good to...
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of farmers out there who think, what the hell's going on? I'm just working to pay the supermarkets for my cheap produce. I mean, this is not working, you know?
No.
And so there's a lot of people thinking, well, we're going to do this differently, and they do realise that sustainability is more important than just farming.
Oh, absolutely.
And also, the idea of monocrops is fading because they're also realising that diversity is more important than volume. So things are changing in the background. Not everyone's doing it, but the conventional farming wisdom of planting wheat over 300 acres and then harvesting it all at once is fine for the person buying it, but it's not very good for the person growing it.
No, and I agree with you. I think there is like such a shift towards multi-crops, I suppose, but that shift away from the monocrop. Because the reality is, if you have a bad year for wheat, what do? Bang.
Yeah, you're gone.
You're gone. And there are lots of shows about it, lots of YouTube and stuff like that, but lots of even podcasts and stuff about people who have made that shift where they've realised that, you know, I was growing monocrops, but then I had to shift, I had to diversify, which is nice. Life should be about
certain farmers are... I mean, they're not mainstream, but they do think, well, I want to leave it better.
Yeah, I got think it. So too.
And
when
you start thinking of that, you're talking sustainability, and that applies just about across the board because it applies to cities as well as to farms. You know, the city has to be sustainable as well. And there's recently something about Adelaide has less trees now than it had in the 60s. And so people are getting worried because that will make it hotter.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see, so it's all becoming a matter of sustainability, and that's a new way of thinking. Now,
I agree with you. The sustainability stuff is vital. If you're looking at your garden, how can I, and I suppose it's a bit like, how can I have this garden in a way that it can kind of almost look after itself with a little bit of input from me, as opposed to me working it really hard?
Yeah, well, that's what you're confronted with and I'm confronted with and everyone else is confronted with.
We are.
So, yeah, you do want to make it better each year. You want it to be cumulatively progressing. Well, I think we can talk about that next week.
I think we could. I totally agree about, looking at that sort of stuff and heading towards that whole thing of that. And how can we make, I guess, our impact greater in the positive and less in the negative? You know, what can we do with that?
And also make life simpler. Or make life easier.
Let's make life easier. I agree with that. Let's make life easier.
Well, that would be a lot of hard work.
Let's do all the hard work to make life easier. So shall we talk about that in April?
I think indeed we can.
We can. And we'll be back in April. So yeah. Thank you very much.
See ya.